Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So it's the One Pra night, half moon, December 28th, getting close to our beloved winter retreat time. And past yesterday, people starting to arrive, the retreat crew, mostly here, missing one still, but most everybody here, and just starting to get our minds around moving into that retreat period. Lungpa Pasano will be coming back tomorrow, and I suspect I'm not the only one who's really looking forward to that. Be nice to have him here in the room with us. So in the hall this evening is almost all familiar faces, and people that are close to the monastery, devoted to the practice, monks and lay practitioners. Last night, Ajahn Yanako gave a talk and covered a number of different areas, but touched on some areas that were not necessarily the run-of-the-mill kind of teachings that you hear in most Western Dhamma practice centers. The Buddha was somebody who taught many different things to many different people, depending on who his audience was, but mostly I appreciate his teachings that are incredibly straightforward and don't mince words, and he certainly was able to do that. And sometimes some of the teachings have kind of an edge to them that really go against the grain and cause us to become alert and sometimes challenged by what he says, because it points out some realities that we don't always want to look at. So among other things, Ajahn Yanako was talking about cemetery contemplations last night, and he repeated the phrase several times when we get to the bones, kind of crumbling in the final stages of decomposition of the body, the crumbling of the bones, and referring to them as dust in the wind. And I might have been the only one who recognized that as a song. Maybe somebody else did. Yeah, okay, we got a few. Because actually Ajahn Yanako didn't recognize it as a song. He didn't know that he was quoting an older song with that phrase. But tonight at tea time, he and I were having tea together, and we took the opportunity to go on to a website just to see that song. And he jokingly said, well, maybe you should use the words from the song as part of the Dhamma talk tonight. And I I can't do that. But then I thought, well, maybe I can. So it won't be the whole talk, but and I'm not going to sing it. I will spare you my singing voice. But anybody remember the name of the group?
Kansas.
Oh, here we go. All right. I didn't remember it, but anybody remember the year? 77. Were you born then, Yanako?
No.
I didn't think so. I had just graduated from college. Anyway. It's actually, we were looking at the lyrics, and actually it has a fair amount of Dhamma in it. And some important stuff, and not just Yeah, it's not the easier kinds of lessons in life. It's more of the clear-cut, hardcore kinds of reflections. I close my eyes only for a moment, and the moment's gone. All my dreams pass before my eyes, a curiosity. Dust in the wind, all they are is dust in the wind. Same old song, just a drop of water in an endless sea. All we do crumbles to the ground, though we refuse to see. Dust in the wind, all we are is dust in the wind. Now don't hang on, nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky. It slips away, and all your money won't another minute buy. Dust in the wind, all we are is dust in the wind. Everything is dust in the wind. So there's some stuff there to reflect on. When the Buddha starts outlining some of his teachings and some of the motivation to start practicing, his reflections are often along the lines of the First Noble Truth, the fact that there is suffering in the world. And whereas he very soon points out that there is a way to the end of suffering too, he doesn't mince words when he describes his understanding of the depth of suffering that can be found within the realm of existence. In fact, his motivation for seeking enlightenment, and particularly on the night of his enlightenment, was being able to clearly see the endless cycle of birth and death of beings over innumerable lifetimes and in innumerable circumstances, beings passing away, rising, being born, living and passing away according to their karma. In these first two watches of the night of the night of his enlightenment, this was what he spent his time reflecting on, seeing through his extraordinary meditative powers, and provided this sense of motivation to find the way out of this cycle of suffering. One of the strongest sets of phrases that he uses, I have used in my reflections more than once, but I still find them incredibly moving, and I'm not good at memorizing things to a very accurate degree, but the one I'm thinking about comes in a series of reflections, but the core of it is something along the lines of, monks, this samsara is without a discernible beginning. From an undiscernible first point in time, beings have been roaming on and on, obstructed by ignorance and fettered by craving. Beings have experienced this level of despair, anguish, suffering, and swelled the cemeteries. It is enough to develop disenchantment with all formations, enough to develop dispassion for them, and it is enough to be liberated from them. So in this reflection, he points out the significance of what it is that we all find ourselves enmeshed in. And he uses strong words. Many people maybe in this room have experienced a lot of suffering, difficulties in their lives, losses of partners, losses of family, friends, either through separation or divorce or death. Many people maybe didn't grow up in such great families. And other people who have had many good advantages still have been able to realize that samsara doesn't have all the answers to long-lasting happiness. and are seeking a longer-term sense of contentment. But the Buddha doesn't stop at defining the problem. He offers the solution as well, and the prospect that there is a possibility for realizing the end of this endless cycle. And so it's not only a message of strong reality, but it's a message of hope as well, a message of inspiration that we have the capacity as human beings in this world right now to move beyond samsara. In the meditation last night, before the talk, it was a very interesting meditation. I had a fair amount of mental activity. The mind was fairly activated. Just a number of things from the week, from the day in particular, kind of resurfacing with a lot of, normal day-to-day, mundane kinds of things coming up, rehashing a few things, and also, more significant ones that have had a bit more of an emotional pull, tug, charge to them, and was watching them. The meditation actually was it was quite enjoyable in some ways because I was able to kind of stay with it, the flow, and really strong image of how the mind was working was coming up, because I would find myself touching and feeling and experiencing at a slightly deeper level the feelings and perceptions and moods that were kind of coursing through. And then, as is often the case, one's attention or awareness often rides right along the surface rather than staying with them at any meaningful level. And the mind that's riding along the surface is the one that conceptualizes and proliferates to some extent in the thinking realm, in the opinions realm, the views realm, the commentating realm that's operating above the perceptions and feelings, moods. And this image of kind of a stone skipping across the surface of a body of water came to my mind, and that, every night it would be like throwing a stone, and the stone would just touch the surface of the water and then glance off of it and then go a little ways and then touch the surface of the water and glance off of it again. And it sort of felt like, my awareness was going through that kind of process of touching the body of water, the underlying experiences on a more affective heart level, but immediately bouncing off without spending much time in the water itself, bouncing off the top and into ideas or comments or certain views or opinions about what it was that was coursing through that experience. And then as the meditation time progressed and I was settling a bit, moving deeper, I found that there was more time underneath the surface of the water, just swimming in a more still, closed environment that felt very peaceful, even though there was still a level of feeling and memory and things like that happening. It was much more on the affective level, feeling it in my body, feeling just sort of the momentary experience of it rather than judging it or commenting on it or sort of moving in the intellectual realm around it. And it every now and then would resurface again and skip across the top a little bit and then go back down again a bit deeper. And it's an image probably that came to my mind because before I was a monk, I used to really enjoy swimming. And would oftentimes find myself trying to go the whole length of the pool underneath the surface and really enjoying the silent, still quality of that experience. But starting to settle into the water itself of the mind, the experience of the depth of the mind, rather than just skimming along the surface, bouncing off the top of the water, and it became a very enjoyable, pleasant way. Even though there was still activity in the mind and experience happening, dropping down into seeing it as it really is, rather than reacting to it or commenting on it or judging certain aspects of it. And you can see how in our daily experience, we spend a lot of time on that surface level. It's where I think a lot of selfing is done, a lot of self-creation happens, is in that conceptualization process on that surface level. All the opinions about certain experiences surface, maybe we're experiencing some sort of desires or some sort of aversions, some level of confusion, and we touch it for a moment, and then we have a comment about it, we have an idea about it, we see it as something that's good or something that's bad, and it's something that we are, something that we own, something that some characteristic that we have an identity with. And we judge ourselves around that. We say it's something I want, but it's a form of desire, and I shouldn't have that kind of desire. So we add a layer of judgment to it, or it's a moment of tension or anger, and we say, not only do we experience it very briefly. And then glance off of it because it's too painful to go into. But then we add another layer of comment of, like, this isn't something that a monk should think about, or this isn't something that a devoted practitioner, one who's devoted to the precepts, should be thinking about. And we spin off again into another layer of complication and selfing, skimming along the surface, or fear or anxiety, or just boredom, just a sense of boredom, skipping along the surface, just reacting to, judging ourselves, commenting on. And that we spend a whole lot of our time in this layer of selfing, becoming, developing sakkaya ditti, self view, personality view, all happening because we're skimming along the surface. And if we can take it to a deeper level, and instead of trying to comment and define ourselves, identify with all of these different inclinations, drives, habits, and criticizing, judging ourselves, complicating the whole self-layering aspect even more, if we can just move below the surface, dwell with a feeling, with an experience in its more basic context, all of these feelings, perceptions can be known just for what they are without all of the commentary. And we can experience them in the body. Ajahn Suchito often talks about it as embodiment, knowing these experiences, for better or for worse, within the felt sense of the body. And that way we see them more clearly, we see them as an experience, we see them on a deeper level, and don't need to comment, proliferate, defend, judge ourselves, create ourselves around all of these experiences. Ajahn Suchito again suggests, asking ourselves the question when these are experiences to help us direct our mind in that direction to ask ourselves, rather than, you know, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Why questions are notoriously send you in the wrong directions. More towards asking yourself, how does this feel? So just posing that question when there's an experience happening that's causing one to just drift along the surface or bounce along the surface. Ask yourself the question, how does this feel? How do I feel? And move into the body. Just repetitively doing that over and over again to help sink below the surface a little bit. How do I feel? How does this feel? And really getting to know that experience and be with it at that level. And let it just be that simple. Doesn't have to become complicated with comments and opinions, judgments. This is moving in the direction of, as Ajahn Janako again was talking about last night, being in the present moment, not getting drunk in the past and in the future, but staying in the present moment with the experience of how does it feel. So this winter retreat that's coming up, you know, we all, most of us here in the room, will be partaking in that. And it's an opportunity to start this process of moving deeper, trying to delayer, move a little bit below the depths. And it's really good to ask ourselves, you know, how are we using our time? Just with the reflection in mind, that early reflection of samsara, since beginning with samsara, we've been obstructed by ignorance and fettered by craving. How much longer do we want to keep doing that? How many more lifetimes do we want to keep doing that? The opportunity is to keep on doing it into the endless future. Or the opportunity is to start looking hard and closely at how we can free ourselves from it. Everybody here has that capacity. Everybody here, I think, has that inclination. We want, this is what we're looking for. And we have this wonderful opportunity as monastics and long-term residents here in the community. There's no better environment, particularly as we move into this three-month retreat. There's no better place to be to really take a deep look at this. And the lay people who have come to be here, sincere, committed, ready to go, slightly different role, will be offering service to some degree, as well as jumping in and participating. But whether we're here as monastics with this wonderful opportunity on an ongoing basis, or here as the lay people for being able to take off a few months of time and really taking advantage of that, this is what we have. This is where we're going for the next few months. So we can steer ourselves in that direction, really take advantage of this. There's no time to waste. Same old song, just a drop of water in an endless sea. Now's our chance to come to some clarity. The good thing is that it's also a very enjoyable process. I mean, the messages, the motivations are hard to hear sometimes, hard for us to get our minds around, but the upside is that all of the teachings that we have from the Buddha are ones that, right from the beginning, lead towards very enjoyable, pleasant states of being, states of mind. And just right from the start, like we did tonight, taking the eight precepts, establishing that as the core for the next 3 months for those of you who are coming to the monastery to help out. And or will be around the monastery on the precepts, five precepts. Establishing this as our basis, that in itself leads to a really beautiful joyous state of mind, one that's free from remorse. That in itself is a big undertaking, a big accomplishment. All of the qualities that the Buddha teaches for our development are qualities that in some way or another start to disentangle that that selfing that we do too as we skim along the surface. Because all of the teachings, whether they're developing wholesome qualities that are still in the realm of samsara but leading in the right direction, or whether they're directly pointing to the relinquishment of formations that lead to eventually to complete liberation, they're all supportive of moving in that direction and of creating an open, clear, steady, peaceful, still state of mind. These are all things that we can enjoy and really take heart in. One of the teachings that I was thinking about that I often like to contemplate is one that talks about Anuruddha, who was one of the Buddha's chief disciples. And Anuruddha had was known for one who had developed some very strong mental powers, specifically the divine eye, being able to see into other realms of existence. And he developed this fairly early on and was presumably able to see some of the same aspects of birth and death over endless times that the Buddha used on his, as contemplation on the night of his enlightenment. But as this particular sutta tells, that the commentary anyway says that Anuruddha was in a period of practicing many months of walking meditation, and as he was coming to the end of about 8 months of that, he sat down and moved into more of a still contemplation, and apparently in his mind a series of thoughts arose that are well known, I think, to many people. But he starts to contemplate on some quality, what became known, or what was later referred to by the Buddha as qualities of a great person. And so Anuruddha is thinking these thoughts, and the first one is this Dhamma. This Dhamma is for one who is modest, not for one who is self-aggrandizing. Then this Dhamma is for one who is contented, not for one who is discontented. This Dhamma is for one who delights in solitude, not for one who delights in company and engagement. This Dhamma is for one who is energetic, makes effort, not for one who is lethargic or lazy. This Dhamma is for one who is mindful, not for one who is muddle-minded. This Dhamma is for one who is concentrated or collected, not for one who is unconcentrated or scattered. This Dhamma is for one with wisdom, not for one without wisdom. So Anuruddha has these thoughts that are popping into his head, and the Buddha picks up on this and comes to Anuruddha and says, yes, those are very true and great characteristics of people. And he said, and also there's one more that you didn't mention. And the Buddha adds that this Dhamma is for one who delights in non-complication, not for one who delights in complication. Nipapancha, non-complication or non-proliferation, non-objectification. So these are the eight qualities of a great person. And when you think about those qualities, those are qualities that are all pointing towards experience in a skillful way, pointing towards development of the heart, development of the mind, but don't have to at all participate or partake of selfing, of developing a self-identity around it. In fact, they point in the opposite direction. So even the very first one, delighting in Dhamma, or this Dhamma is for one who is modest. And the Buddha expands on that just a little bit by saying that one who delights in modesty, not in, in self-aggrandizement, creating self, he does not even wish others to know him as one who delights in modesty or one who practices with modesty. He doesn't expect, he doesn't hope others notice his contentment. He doesn't expect others to notice his delight for solitude. He doesn't expect others to notice his energy, mindfulness, concentration, or wisdom. That is an example of one who is modest, who does not delight in self-aggrandizement. He just doesn't have expectations or thoughts that others should know him for these qualities. One who is contented, is satisfied with just the four requisites, food, clothing, shelter, and medicines when sick, on a very simple basis, easily satisfied, not discontent, not wanting things that aren't possible. One who delights in solitude, not in proliferative company, engagement. He describes that as a monastic living in solitude is often visited by other monks or nuns or laymen, laywomen, and he does his best to talk with them and possibly answer their questions in a way that quickly dismisses them. So he doesn't totally ignore them, but he doesn't spend a whole lot of time hanging out and chatting, encourages them to move on so that he can delight in solitude, in quiet. One who is energetic, consistently and very energetically puts forth right effort to look at the wholesome mind conditions that one can generate and continues to do that, and looks at the unwholesome qualities that one can work towards letting go of and move on from, applies effort, energy, without developing laziness or lethargy or disinterest. Uses the opportunity to continuously develop energy and effort. Mindfulness, developing that quality of mindfulness, all Buddha just slightly expands on that by just saying he's one who constantly trying to recollect, remember, bring forth clarity of what one's doing and where one's putting one's attention, developing the foundations, the establishments of mindfulness, right mindfulness. One who is collected, concentrated, practices towards developing that stillness of mind, that peace of mind, that clarity that acts as a basis for the development of the next to the last quality of wisdom, discernment. Constantly seeing and evaluating one's experience along the lines of the Four Noble Truths, that which understands suffering and the end of suffering and how to do it. And then the last one of non-complication, non-proliferation. It's described as the mind, delighting in this quality, developing calmness, becoming placid, settling down, and finding liberation within that non-complication, within that non-proliferation. And I think this really points to the non-selfing aspect of it, of the practice as well, that it's at this level of papancha that we create and complicate our experience. It's where perceptions become conceptions. The I moves into experience. The sense of self starts to build upon the experience, add more to it, move into it, proliferate on it, complicate it, create more experiences that we then react to again, more perceptions, more complications. And it's this cycle that winds up our experience and hardens even further the sense of me and mine. So this Dhamma is for one who delights in that non-complication, that non-proliferation, the non-selfing abilities that we have, the potential for that. So you can see that these are all very wholesome qualities that move away from just the surface reactions, the way we normally dwell in our minds, and move towards deeper qualities that are fundamental to the realization of liberation, the understanding of where the path can take us, moving things down into a deeper level. So with winter retreat coming, we have this great opportunity to simplify things. We have all the supports, all the requisites necessary to tone down. You know, those of you who have come from work and school and the outside, the quote-unquote outside world, you know, have taken this really precious opportunity to come to a quiet place and to practice with a community that's going to try and stay focused in this quiet, still, contemplative way for 3 months. A chance to move deeper, to let go of some of the trappings that we get involved with. And that's for the monastic community, too. You know, we have a pretty engaged life here. Lots of people coming and going, activities to maintain the monastery. But now, again, we have this opportunity to really move deeply, experience some of the solitude, the inner solitude that can be had from a ramped down time. It's really important, again, to take advantage of it. It's just, it's so rare. And we've just been doing this for so long, so many lifetimes. Same old song. Just a drop of water in an endless sea. Now's the time, now's the opportunity. Let's use it, let's take advantage of it. I think I'll leave it there for tonight. Sadhu.